You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Skelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What? El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
Well, how about this, everybody? A full-sized edition, full meal deal with the one, the only El Hombre, Michael Bradley. How are you, man?
Wow, Seattle gets a comeback win and a full segment with me? Yeah. How lucky can you get?
It's Christmas come early for everybody.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
How are you, man? Everything good?
I'm great, yes. Everything's fabulous.
It's funny because Michael sent me a text the other night during the Seahawks game saying, you guys have a great team, but those uniforms, my goodness. Something along
really?
Those lines, yeah.
Oh, they're horrible. Well, horrible. It looks like a softball team from the county I live in, and that's not a compliment.
So, uniforms aside, and I tend to agree with you. I don't like those uniforms, but they win.
And meanwhile, they look like that. And last night, how good did the Chargers look? I mean, I could watch them do anything in those uniforms.
Yeah, those are cool. Those are definitely
that's
cool.
That's the San Diego Charger
uniform. That's a good-looking
right
uni right there.
John Hadle.
Yep.
Right.
What was your takeaway from that game, though? Because, you know, we've been talking about it. Seahawks are 5-0. They're undefeated. It was a game where you could go one way and say, hey, that's what great teams do. When things aren't clicking, things aren't going your way, they still find a way to dig it out of the fire and pull away with a win. Or you can go the other way and say, man, the defense is going to cost them at some point, and it's problematic. What was your takeaway?
I have several takeaways. The first is what Andy Reid always used to say after the Eagles won a game, even if they beat, you know, a grade school. It's always good to get a win in the National Football League. And there are no rankings. Right? It's all done by record. So 5-0 is 5-0, even if you played the Jets and the Giants 2.5 times each. All right? So that's 5 wins. That's the first thing. A win is a win. Secondly, comeback wins are important. They show character and they show the teams that had a win. I mean, last night, San Diego gacked up a giant lead and a great performance by its rookie quarterback because their stupid kicker messed an extra point and doinked one off the uprights. And then the third thing is, yeah, their defense is going to be and give them some trouble. You know, the team's not going to go undefeated, but it has to tighten some stuff up as the season goes on.
Hey, Michael, I'm just looking. I mean, the week before, I think we talked about the Seahawks had zero penalties. This week they had three penalties, and you know the other side had six. Did the Vikings? But have you been able to tell? You know, I mean, I guess it's not been terribly obvious. And one of the big plays that the Seahawks got was a holding penalty on Benson Mayoa down, you know, at the very end of that game, which helped them out. But I'm just curious, as you go through, are you looking at going? I mean, I saw an offensive lineman blocking a linebacker in his hook zone, 12 yards downfield. A couple things like that, but it hasn't been terribly obvious to me, I guess.
The things that I think we're not seeing, they're letting a lot more hand fighting go on in pass plays, especially down the field. I think we're seeing fewer pass interference penalties. Now, I may be wrong. Someone's going to bust out a stat and go, Bradley, don't know what the hell he's talking about. And, you know, they'd be right. But I also think holding is down. And I'm seeing a lot of holds. You're seeing edge rushers just get hooked. And guys inside getting grabbed, and it's not being called. And even last night before the game, they had the ESPN had its official guy on there in the booth saying that a lot of penalties aren't being called there. And, you know, if you average three a game for a season, that's tremendous. So I wouldn't be upset about that. But I think they're letting them play a little more. And this is, again, how much offense can we get in? If you're letting the offensive linemen hold, that's going to let the quarterbacks be safer, A, and B, have more time to find open receivers.
Okay, so Michael, you called the Chargers kicker a stupid kicker. I take it you don't like kickers. See, I like kickers.
I don't mind kickers.
They're so critically important. And that kid missed one. He hit the upright, so it wasn't like he just completely whiffed on it. It was a 51-yarder. And so I go away from that feeling bad for the guy. But how do you really feel about kickers?
No, I'm not saying I don't like kickers. I'm saying
I am.
You miss the extra point. Okay, you can't miss the extra point. Look, they're a necessary part of the game. You know, it's like saying, well, special teams don't matter. Well, no, special teams do matter. And this guy happens to be a kicker. Now, if you could find a big, burly guy, right? Lou Groza, Lou the Toe Groza was a big, fat, big, big guy, football player looking kind of guy. He was a kicker. Paul Hornung was
Sebastian Janikowski.
Yeah, well, Seabass, yeah, if he has him to run more than 10 yards, he probably needs supplemental oxygen.
I know. We saw it here in Seattle. It was
he pulled a hammy. Kicking.
Right. So my point is, what I'm saying is that you miss a 51-yarder, don't get off the upright, that's one thing. But missing the extra point, that was a huge part of that game. That forces the Saints to go for two at some point. You got to make those. Those are the ones you got to make. And I'm not saying all. Look, kickers are part of the team. I know that a lot of football players don't like them because sometimes there is a disproportionate amount of responsibility given to them. The gladiators fight for 59 minutes and 55 seconds and in trots the soccer player to win the game or lose the game.
It's
tough.
I know Drew Brees statistically had a good game last night, but he didn't look right to me. How about you?
Yeah, I agree with you. He doesn't get the ball down the field anymore. Now, he didn't have Michael Thomas, and that's part of it. But, I mean, that you could tell the Chargers knew that. You know, in the first half, they were playing 9-10 guys close to the line of scrimmage. They'd have a high safety, but they dropped that other safety down to crowd the intermediate routes. And as soon as they threw short, those guys jumped them fast. So I think that you're seeing Breeze now in a different type of situation. And I said, I think it was on this very program. It may have been another one. I do so many because I'm so popular. But I think I said that the Saints were going to be my NFC team going to the Super Bowl. If Breeze can't get the ball down the field, they're going to run into some defenses that are going to make their lives pretty difficult.
All right, what is going on with Carson Wentz? 6 touchdowns, 9 interceptions on the year. He's got a quarterback rating of 68.5.
He's playing with the junior varsity offense. I mean, I don't know if you watched the game on Sunday. I mean, his wide receivers were a rookie from Boise State Hightower who didn't catch a really nice pass he threw on a deep pass in the end zone. He had Travis Fulgham, who was cut by the Lions and the Packers. He caught 10 balls. Finally, the Steelers said, okay, let's put Joe Hayden on him. We'll end this. They didn't have his second tight end, Dallas Goedert. Zach Ertz, one of the interceptions was when Zach Ertz got bumped a little bit running his pattern and didn't finish the pattern. The ball went right to the defender. His offensive line is comprised of 4 guys. Right now, Lane Johnson may be done for the year because of his ankle. 4 guys who don't belong on an NFL offensive line right now. And to quote Viper from Top Gun, and you have a confidence problem. It's clear that he's not as confident as he was before.
So how is this being received out there in Philly? Are they putting it on him, or are they like you where they're saying, well, what do you expect him to do because of everything that's not around him?
How do you think it's being received out here? Everybody's killing him. We're back on the Nick Foles train. Foles beat Tom Brady last week, and all of a sudden everybody's on talk radio saying, should we have kept Foles? And Jalen Hurts comes in and throws a line drive to the backup tight end. It looks like a laser, and now people are starting to go, maybe we got to get him ready to play. That's ridiculous. But at the same time, you know, expecting Wentz to throw for 300 yards against a bunch of guys who can't get open is not realistic. He played better against Pittsburgh, even though he had a couple miscues. But it was his best game of the year. He's still not back to where he was. But I mean, my goodness. No Alshon Jeffrey, no Deshaun Jackson, no Dallas Goedert, a bad offensive line. He's playing with one hand behind his back.
And Michael, now, do you teach like journalism classes?
Teach metallurgy. What do you think I teach? Yes, journalism.
Well, I thought maybe you're an attorney or something like that. Are you an attorney?
My father was a trial attorney.
Oh, okay.
I learned how to argue at the dinner table. That's all we did.
But, by the way, do they still have metallurgy classes?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
In at the University of Novosibirsk in Siberia, they do, but not around here.
So what would you say to one of your students that asked a pitcher about the tightness of his pants? I don't know if you saw this. It was Walker Buehler, and I guess he wasn't very thrilled about it, but somebody asked about the tightness of his pants.
And Jim said, that's a good question.
Jim thought it was a good question.
I can't tell you whether it was or was not. What was it in relation to his ability to be comfortable on the mound? Was that the thing?
Well, it was trending on Twitter, Walker Buehler's pants, trending on Twitter. Oh. And so the reporter, and because the Dodgers lost, it was not an appropriate time to be asking the question.
No, you ask him that, in the locker room or before a game or something when he's not pitching. That's only the second dumbest question I've ever heard. After Bob Huggins, when he was coaching Cincinnati, had just lost an overtime decision in the Elite Eight to get to the Final Four, he comes out. The first question that somebody questioned, and I'm putting quotation marks, that somebody asked him was, tough loss, huh, Bob? Now, if you know anything about Huggins, he doesn't suffer fools lightly. So what he said is, where did you go to school? And the kid tells him, he goes, why? He says, because I want to call their journalism department and tell them they're turning out idiots.
Oh,
it was unbelievable.
Peach.
The whole place, it was one of those things. I don't know if you remember in the Flintstones when Fred would get embarrassed, he would actually shrink down to the size of like 6 inches and run out going, kid pretty much did that.
Man, all he would have to do is also tell the guy to not slouch in his chair, and then Jim would really hate him because that's why he hates Matt Patricia. Because he scolded one of the journalists.
Yeah, I saw that. And Matt Patricia, who looks always like an unmade bed, hasn't won any games. And it's now clear that his success, quote-unquote, with the Patriots was only because Belichick was running the defense. For him to say that, it's like, I would have said, trim your beard, fatso.
Yeah, and my gosh, he's put on like 100 pounds. And, he always looks disheveled and, a little slovenly
he
there.
He swallows a lot of aggression and a lot of pizzas.
wait. Stripes.
Thank you.
John Candy. There we go.
Dewey Oxberger.
Dewey Oxberger.
All right, Michael, since we're talking about dumb questions, I can, be guilty of that on a daily basis here on this show. But what's been the dumbest question you've ever asked an athlete? And then thought to yourself, oh, man, I just want to grab those words out of the air and bring them back in.
I know I've asked several dumb questions, but I've excised all those. I mean, if I held on to the dumb things I've said in the course of my life, I wouldn't be able to get out of bed in the morning. So, I mean, my attitude is much like an NFL cornerback and an NBA shooter. I don't think about the last play. I got to move forward.
Short memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to. Otherwise, I'm telling you. You're talking to a guy the last time he watched a Michigan game in public, which was like 5 years ago, had to call the next day to apologize to four different people for his behavior. So I have to be very careful.
Oh, you had a list. All right, let me make this call. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, it was. I want to apologize for my behavior last night.
Yeah, I've done the same thing. As I've gotten older, I think back, and then I'm at a game, and somebody's irritating me, or they're drunk and just being belligerent, and I just have to sit there, and I can't really say anything because I think about what I was like in my 20s and how I probably ruined the game time experience for someone else like 30 years ago.
This wasn't in my 20s.
Oh, boy.
That's the problem.
Oh, jeez. Hey, as far as the NFC East goes, you've got the Cowboys sitting atop with a 2-3 record. They are leading the division. And really, that was such a terrible injury for Dak Prescott. And I know you hate the Cowboys, but seeing that just breaks your heart.
Never. But I turned it on just in time to see him being taken off, and they showed the injury. And I just said, oh, no, not – I mean, I feel bad for him as the person for the injury, but I also feel bad – he bet on himself this year.
Yeah.
Now, granted, he made a ton of money on the franchise tag, but he didn't take the long-term deal, and now he's not going to be able to get that.
Yeah, and, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. And, I was listening to one of the guys on ESPN, and he was saying, well, this is the ugly side of the business of football. I'm like, it worked out for Joe Flacco. Remember, Joe Flacco bet on himself, and it worked out.
Yeah.
And he's still making a lot of money. I mean, business is business. And
still making $30-some million this year.
Yeah.
So.
But, if you think, gosh, I left, over 100 on the table, you're going to be kicking yourself. But that's just the way it goes.
And don't forget this, too. And I may be wrong, but I've read this too many times to not believe it. The players get pressure from the players' union to take less money. Each contract has to kind of stand on the ones that came before it so that the next ones will be fat and juicy as well, and particularly a quarterback's position. So
yeah.
I feel bad for, he may have been ready to take the deal, but somebody may have said, no, it's not enough, or, it's not, this doesn't get you past this person or this person. And maybe then the Cowboys said, all right, we'll talk to you after the season.
Who's the best team in that division?
I have no idea. I think right now it's Dallas because, you can't say an 0-5 Giants team. The Washington NFL franchises, it's a great story that Alex Smith got to play. But, if your options are Alex Smith, who hasn't played in 2 years, and Kyle Allen, who's, you know, the only reason he's there is that he knows that the scheme, that team's no good. And the Eagles are so beaten up, and their defense is so rotten. I mean, Chase Claypool had scored 3 touchdowns when he lined up in the slot, and they put a linebacker on him. Ben Roethlisberger, who's like a 90-year veteran of the NFL, immediately audibles into another play. I think he basically stood there and said, "Chase, I'm throwing it to you. This guy can't cover you." And then Claypool catches the pass for his 4th touchdown of the day. And it's like, who's coaching this team? Who's the defensive coordinator? He's a moron for doing that.
Hey, Michael, the Lakers beat the Heat to win the NBA Finals, the NBA Championship in 6 games Sunday night. After the game, LeBron James said, "I want my darn respect." And I thought to myself, man, when somebody asks for respect, it makes me respect them less than I respected them before. What do you think?
I agree 100%. I mean, look, here's where LeBron doesn't get respect. I'm not going to talk about the people who are not who don't like LeBron because of Black Lives Matter. Those people are not basketball fans. They're not people that you should talk to about basketball, etc. So if that's what he's saying about respect, I get it. But in terms of basketball, the only thing that somebody might say that you're not getting respect in is that people say that you're not as good or better than Michael Jordan. Okay? That's it. So you've won 4 championships. You are clearly the best player in the game right now. You are one of the 2 or 3 best players of all time, and I'll go back to what I forget who said it. I wish I could give the person credit for saying this, but it's not greatest of all time. It's greatest of their era, because, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to say George Mike? Let's bring George Mikan into the NBA right now and talk about what he would do with his sweeping hook shot. Okay, he would be a backup center, but he was the best player of his era. Wilt was the best player of his era. Michael Jordan, the best player of his era. LeBron, the best player of his era. So I'm with you. Somebody asked for respect. I demand respect. No, you command respect. Your behavior brings about respect, not your wishes.
You know, that's a great point about the era, because Bob and I have been looking up, and, you know, a couple of years ago it caught my eye. If you look at, like, Ken Stabler or Terry Bradshaw, and even Joe Montana. Like, Joe Montana, I think, was like a 62-63% completion, but those other guys were like 50, 55. John Elway was like a 58% career passer.
Right.
And now you've got, you know, guys that are actually having for a season, like Kirk Cousins and Drew Brees, 70%, you know, ridiculous amount. I mean, the rules have changed. There's a lot more advantages, things like that. So you just kind of have to, you can't compare those numbers, because you have to look at what was being done at that time, I guess.
Right. You have to recognize greatness. I mean, you want to talk about a player who people don't, you know, and people are going to go, "Oh, listen to the old guy." But Otto Graham, okay, who played it for the Cleveland Browns, he played in the All-American Football Conference, and then he played in the NFL. Otto Graham played in a championship game every single year he was in the league. All right? So that's not bad. He won 6, 7 total championships. So that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But people are going to say, okay, Otto Graham played, you know, at a time, and he completed only, where's his percentage? He completed 55.8%, which for 1946 to 1955 is outrageous.
Right.
He completed 64.7 one time. That's crazy. So you're right. You have to compare you have to look at the eras. You know, they asked Will Chamberlain one time, he was like 48, 49 years old, and they said, "Will, if you played right now, how many points would you score a game?" He said, "Between 10 and 15. They said, "What?" He goes, "Well, I am 48 years old. So you can't take the player from 1979 or 1995 and put him into 2020 and say, "Well, oh, he's..." You know, it's like I try to argue with my children about the Dream Team, and they're like, "Oh, the 2012 Olympic team would have beaten them badly." I'm like, you have to be kidding me. 11 Hall of Famers on that team, and the only one they wouldn't put in was the only person who isn't a Hall of Famer is Leitner, and he's a college basketball Hall of Famer, one of the greatest college basketball players of all time. Isaiah Thomas should have been on a team that would have been 12 for 12.
Hey, switching to baseball, have you been watching the playoffs? And B, I've just been taking great delight in watching the Astros struggle to an 0-2 start with the Rays series, and watching Altuve throw the ball into the ground, and Baker publicly saying, "Boy, I hope he doesn't have the yips." I mean, it's just, as you would say, delicious and well deserved.
No, it is. But let's not get too carried away yet, right? Let's not start counting our money.
Yeah, it's not over yet, but so far it's been really nice.
First of all, the most delicious thing was watching the Rays beat the Yankees in a taut Game 5. I haven't watched a baseball game involving other teams, really paid attention to it, like had it on the TV and didn't turn away from it in a long time. Friday night, I couldn't take my eyes off that game. That was tremendous, and that at-bat that led to the winning home run was outrageous. And the drama behind it with Chapman having thrown at that guy's head earlier in the season, and then he hit two home runs a day after that, and then he hits a winning home run off of Chapman to win the series. Oh, my goodness. It was fabulous.
Yeah, and that kid was signed for $1,000 back in 2016.
Yeah, you got to love that. $1,000 and he's hitting the game-winning home run. So, baseball, I'll tell you, when you have a team, I don't have a team in it, right? The Phillies aren't playing. But I go back to 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, when the Phillies were playing in the playoffs every year. Every pitch has your heart jumping and your stomach rolling around. It's, NFL playoffs are great and the drama is tremendous, but for some reason, playoff baseball is just absolutely amazing.
Hey. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, Michael, you got a chance to see DK Metcalf the other night. He had the game-winning touchdown. And Jamal Adams earlier today tweeted out that DK is a new era Megatron, talking about Calvin Johnson. And he said, I'm not arguing with anybody over that. What were your impressions of Metcalf? Because right now he's among the league leaders.
He's having a great, great year. And he caught that pass against the Eagles last year that clinched the playoff game them. Great size, tremendous strength, freakish athlete. Look, we have such a tendency now to immediately lionize and bestow tremendous titles on people after a year, year and a half. Remember RG3, remember Johnny Manziel, right? We tend to jump the gun on this stuff. Let's just say right now Metcalf is playing great football. He has tremendous potential to become an elite receiver in the league. And let's see if he's able to, stay healthy and continue to improve and realize all of that potential.
Hey, quickly, I want to ask you about Zach Greinke. Did you see his comments about enjoying the fact that for those that don't know, I wanted to read his comments. He's saying he's enjoying playing these games without fans. And he says, I don't really notice fans when the game's going on, but warming up and practice before games, I mean, for me, it's nice not having fans in the stands. And he was asked to explain. He said, because then there's no one there to talk to you and ask for autographs and want pictures and all of that stuff. I don't like to do that stuff. It's nice not having them for me. Most people like it. I don't like it. And Dave and I were just talking before the show. We were watching a montage of LeBron James and him interacting with fans, and I was just sort of reflecting on how big of a deal it is for that fan that gets any kind of acknowledgement from one of their favorite players, whether it's a smile, an autograph, a wristband, whatever it is. They'll talk about it for the rest of their lives where it's a blip. It's a second in that athlete's life, and maybe they never remember it. But you just see how much it means to people. And then to see this comment today where he's just like, I don't have to worry about pictures. I don't have to talk to anybody or autographs. You kind of go, come on, man.
By the time next season ends, he will have made $317 million in his career. All right? One of my son's great highlights when he was young was one time he was asking Rex Hudler for an autograph when he was with the Phillies. And he was about 9 years old, and he said, Mr. Hudler, can I have your autograph? Well, Hudler stops warming up, walks over, said, who said that? My son raises his hand. He picks him up, lifts him over, brings him on the field, gives him a ball. I think he gave him his mitt.
Wow.
Signed it, said, your show of respect was tremendous. My son had stars in his eyes for days. Look, if a 40-year-old man comes up and asks you to sign seven things, it's clear he wants to sell them. Those guys are pains in the neck, nuisances, and they got something wrong with them. But when a kid wants an autograph and you're making that kind of money, it's part of your job. We all have parts of our job that we don't like. You guys have to talk to me every week. So, that's not easy. But you do it, and you do it quasi-professionally, I have to say, most of you. So Greinke can at least show a little bit of respect for the people paying his salary, for crying out loud. That's uncalled for. If you feel that way, first of all, you shouldn't feel the way. And if you do feel that way, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, it's and I know he said he was diagnosed with social anxiety disorder since before high school, but he also said he no longer considered it a problem. So I guess that's just who he is now. So it, disappointing to say the least.
I'll tell you, I wish I were a ball player because I think it would be so fun once a week to just say, I'm going to go take 15 minutes and sign everything I can sign before a game. I'm all warmed up, limbered up. I got my bubble gum ready, got my uniform on. I'm just going to get out and sign a bunch of stuff for little kids and make a smile at them, take selfies with them. And it's great for your image, but it's also because you get a chance to have some real communication with – now, if people are abusive, forget them, but have some communication with the fans. I just don't get the fact that this guy's saying that. It's a poor look for him, and it's a poor look for baseball.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. He is El Hombre, Michael Bradley. You can find him on Twitter, @DailyHombre. @DailyHombre is where you find him on Twitter. Michael, we'll do it again next week.
So long, suckers.
Not quite as clean there, huh?
Not clean.
Yeah.
You imagine trying to swish that every week, though?
Yeah, I think he feels the pressure. He might have the yips. You know, he knows we're all listening.
Phone hang up yips.
All right. We said that we would know if the Seahawks run defense was for real or not after the Vikings game, and it appears the answer is maybe not, but can it improve? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
So we talked before the Vikings game about this run defense of the Seahawks, because that was the one area where they were truly excelling. Before the Dolphins game, I think their average was, 66 yards?
76.
76 yards before the Dolphins game?
Oh,
yeah,
after.
Before the Dolphins game, it was in the 60s, then went up a little bit after the Dolphins game. So it was like, all right, now with the league's leading rusher, with Dalvin Cook, we're going to get a true sense of what this run defense is like. They gave up over 200.
Yes, they did.
So, well, and not all that, mostly his backup. I think he went for 80?
65, and Madison went for 112.
Yeah.
And then even Boone, he came in, the third stringer. He ran two carries for 19 yards. So, yeah.
So how do we – it's one game, I understand, but they've been struggling, you know, defensively across the board with the exception of the run game up to that point. What's the takeaway? Do we look at it and go, okay, it was kind of fool's gold in the first four games, or they're somewhere in between what they were in the first four versus that game? They're not that bad, but they probably weren't as good, speaking just run defense, as they were in the first four games?
It's I don't know, because in the beginning, you know, there was lots of comebacks by opposing teams that were trying to, you know, come from behind. So there was lots of passing, but I mean, there was some soundness to it. But
yeah, and even Zeke, he only ran it like 13 times or something like that.
Yeah, Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, he actually, they tried to throw him the ball too. I just remember from that game that he had like 2.9 yards per touch. So he was very ineffective. And, you know, they did okay against, I guess, you know, Cam Newton. But, yeah, it's a problem. They just – I think they need to be more physical. And there's a couple of – well, the thing I did on the football 101 is this is a non-play, but what happens is Benson Mayoa gets held on the play. But Cody Barton takes on the fullback and just crushes him. And what happens is the fullback ends up, you know, falling down. Now, does Cody make the tackle? No, he doesn't. But the fullback that he crushed did make the tackle.
Yeah.
Because Madison ends up tripping over his foot. And then the whole thing's nullified anyway. But then you fast forward to the 4th-and-1 where he crushes the fullback again. And him and Benson Mayoa make that play. Bobby comes over and, you know, cleans it up, but him and Mayo absolutely just constricted that gap, because you have to be physical. I mean, you have to come up and take on offensive linemen, not with your hands, but with your shoulders. And, you know, sometimes it takes, you know, trying to just come up and say, I'm going to splatter this guard. And, you know, from that, all good things happen. And that's not the way the Seahawks have played their run defense in the past and over the last few years. It's not really how they're doing it. They're trying to keep their linebackers alive, and from that standpoint, they do well. I mean, they
what
stay
do you
in
mean,
there.
Keep them alive.
Well, they're not gonna run up and take out a guard and you know say, hey, this is my one for one contribution to the defense. It's I'm gonna catch him a little bit and maybe try to get around him, and then maybe I have to retreat a little bit, and that just doesn't generally lead to good run defense. So, I'm not sure if they're going to make a change there, and that might happen. But and this isn't my opinion, it's not a criticism or anything like that. You know, Bobby and KJ are being coached that way. They're being coached to do that, and they stay alive and they end up making lots of tackles. But
Dave, when I hear you say all that, I'm listening intently and I'm going, well, that doesn't sound like they're playing or being coached the way they should be getting coached.
Well, it's interesting, though, because Cody does, and I don't know if it's maybe a style thing and maybe they're allowed to do that. But that's just what I'm seeing. I mean, I could be wrong, but it does seem like that's what's going on. And then the other thing is, look, you go and watch any, big running play. I don't want to say it's easy to find, whose fault it is, because sometimes, maybe a guy's in a gap and it looks like he's supposed to be there and he's not supposed to be there. And then, but there's always a culprit, I mean, you go and look like, this guy's got this gap. It's pretty clear. Looks like this guy gets this gap. I'm not trying to be pro football focused, by the way, because they will, say, well, this guy should have been here. Sometimes, sometimes you don't. Sometimes it's obvious, but again, I'll say promising. And, there's people that are all over the board on Cody Barton. I think Cody Barton's great in pass coverage. He does a good job, and then he's really physical. So, but he looks a little clunky out there sometimes because he's next to Bobby and KJ. But still, I like the kid. I like the way he plays. So, we're going to see. I really wanted to see Jordan Brooks, and we'll get a chance to get him back. And see how physical he's going to be, because he's a hitter. So, but that's just what happens on those plays. I mean, you have to be able to, just be physical and come up and take on guards and things like that. I don't know. It might be an old-fashioned thing,
right?
Because I look around the league and there's lots of guys that kind of, come up and kind of put their hands on the guy and sort of dance around him.
Catching the guy,
yeah. Yeah. So,
well, they're doing better, though, statistically. I mean, they're giving up 3.9 yards per carry. They're eighth in the league, even in spite of the 200 yards they just gave up. And then total yards are giving up 100 a game on the ground, which is around seventh or eighth. But overall, when we look at the total defense and the problems they're having, I just when I listen to you, Dave, I'm thinking, why don't they try it Wyman's way? But if this defense were 17th or 18th in the league, I'd be going, well, okay, it seems like it's working out okay, and maybe, Dave's making some good points, but I'm not as necessarily buying into what you're saying. But I just kind of go, well, if they're 32nd and not doing very well overall, why don't they try doing something differently with the way they're scheming things up and doing the gap integrity stuff?
Couldn't hurt.
Well, I don't know. Look, if I went in there and they said, hey, this is what we're doing, this is why, I'd be like, oh, okay, well, I get it. But, that's just, it's kind of an old school approach, but I do like it. I love it when I see Cody Barton come in there and splatter a fullback and knock him down, and the fullback trips the running back. That's really cool.
Yeah,
I love that.
I like how that play turned out.
I love that stuff.
Even though it was called back. All right, coming up, we'll find out if we got any kind of education today on this program. What we learned is next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
There's big knowledge being dropped on this show every single day, and we've got proof, right, Moore?
Yes, we do.
What do we got today?
Well, first up, we learned that the professor wanted to go out with a bang today.
He's making $19 million out there. I don't think he should be having that tight of pants.
Yeah, something along those lines. I know you'll probably poo-poo this question, but I'm looking at those thinking to myself, I wouldn't wear those pants if I was making that kind of money, and maybe I'm wrong.
Hey, Bob, but I wouldn't bring up tight pants and poo-poo at the same time.
Yeah, that's probably a bad combo, Jim.
What a way to go out, Clayton. You know how to go out in style.
On that note, we'll talk tomorrow, John.
You know what? There was no warning there with Clayton, because usually, you know this, when Clayton is fired up to tell a joke, he starts going,
he winds up.
Hold on. Yeah.
Wind up.
And he just, like, blurted that one out. It was well done.
Yeah. I could tell he was proud of that one, too.
He's had some good ones lately.
He has. Yeah, the professor's on fire.
Yeah, he's just dropping gems out there. Comedic gems. Good stuff. What else did we learn, Maura?
Well, I'm not positive, but I think that we have learned that Bob doesn't like the Astros.
I'm surprised Dusty said this. You just hope he isn't getting the yips. I don't even think you say that publicly. You don't plant that seed. He said, because invariably, they come in bunches. You have to flush it and move on, or else it multiplies. Dusty, what are you doing, man? You're throwing gas on the fire. I love it. I do love it. I do.
Bob, you don't like the Astros.
I don't like them a whole bunch. I have great dislike for the Astros, which we'll be turning it over to that game coming up here after we get done with this. And I'll watch tonight with great anticipation of another screw-up by the Astros.
Well, like Jim, I'm rooting for Mike Zunino.
Heck yeah. I'm still confused by if Zunino goes out there and hits 35 home runs and hits 280, he's not going to be upset with him, but he hates Chris Taylor.
Yeah, well, Chris Taylor was not a bad guy. Was he, Jim?
He wasn't a bad guy at all.
I don't know if he's as nice as Zunino.
Well,
the thing I loved about Zunino is that when we heard that he went in and crushed the bat rack.
Yeah.
That's when I was like, okay, I like this guy.
He won your heart.
Yeah, because he's a nice guy and everything. He's also the one where Jim told him that we're getting ready to play the Brewers, and we're out at Edgar's out there, and Jim said, yeah, you know what, man, I'm still have something against the Brewers, and it got me so mad because they were the Seattle Pilots, and they took them away from us, and, you know, I'm really fired up for this game. And Zunino kind of smiles, he's listening, he's like, well, I'll pass it on to the guys.
Yeah, you think he went from Edgar's into the clubhouse. And,
let's win this one, guys.
Yeah. Win it for that
for the
guy.
Pilots.
For that
guy that just interviewed me was 12 years old, and he was heartbroken in 69 when the Pilots left for Milwaukee, and he still hates Bud Selig.
I'll pass it on to the guy.
He had kind of a little smile on his face, like he was being sarcastic. Great stuff.
I love him. I love his wife, his dogs, his kids, everything about him. And I don't think he's going to end up being like Chris Taylor, hitting 300 or 280 whatever. I guess Taylor wasn't that good this year.
If he has success that he didn't have here in Seattle was my point. If he just all of a sudden is a representative, how about 260? He hits 260 and he's hitting 30 bombs a year and playing great defense.
I'll be happy for him.
I like when Jim starts. Like that Chris Taylor with his 360 and his 19 home runs, and like just getting angrier by the second.
Is it just him, or has it been any other players that were like Smoke?
No, it's just
Smoke
Chris
had success
Taylor.
In Toronto. Did that bother you?
Not really. And Chris Taylor just bugs me. I can't explain it, Bob.
What about Vogey? If Vogey becomes a staple of what the Brewers do,
I'll never root for Vogey.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. I'm more simpatico there.
If he showed up in better shape here and struggled, I'd be like, well, you tried, but he didn't, and he didn't.
What if he showed up like in really excellent shape for the Astros and just raked the entire year, Bob? Would he be your most hated athlete of all time?
He'd be right up there,
He slims down, gets all buffed
up. He's just yoked. And
he's down in Houston just raking.
Launching that's a launch pad as it is. He goes out there.
What we should do if that happens, we should pay for Danny O'Neill's ticket from New York to Seattle and get a seat in the Diamond Club and just have him harass him the whole game next year.
Danny's pretty funny.
That would be brutal.
Danny's funny and embarrassing in the stands.
Yes.
If anybody's ever sat next to him.
What else did we learn, Maura?
We learned El Hombre's mentality is similar to that of an athlete.
I know I've asked several dumb questions, but I've excised all those. I mean, if I held on to the dumb things I've said in the course of my life, I wouldn't be able to get out of bed in the morning. So, I mean, my attitude is much like an NFL cornerback and an NBA shooter. I don't think about the last play. I got to move forward.
Short memory. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to. Otherwise, I'm telling you. You're talking to a guy the last time you watched a Michigan game in public, which was like 5 years ago, had to call the next day to apologize to four different people for his behavior. So I
love that he did something so egregious he felt compelled to call four different people to apologize for his behavior.
Well, plus he was in his 30s or 40s.
No, he said it was 5 years ago, which means he was in his 50s. And he's like, I got a list of four people here I got to call and apologize to.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what he did.
I don't think I've done anything embarrassing in my 50s at a game, but certainly it was almost every Coug game in my 20s.
And what'd you do that was embarrassing? Were you just yelling and screaming, carrying on?
Drunken belligerence. You know, just you name it, and I probably did it.
Screaming expletives and...
Probably, yeah.
Even when Jim does nothing, he just looks sad in the stands. It gets made into a meme.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I had no room to talk. The last, 8 years at the Apple Cup, you really can't say anything. There's nothing you can say.
Is that picture with you with your glasses on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hood on.
Like a hood on. Yeah.
That is pretty priceless.
Who took that? Is that Danny?
I don't know.
It was right after
I think it was on the TV.
Oh, it was on television, and Jim was being a glory hound down in the end zone.
Yeah.
They wanted to perfectly represent the misery of the Cougars, and they said, hey, here's a guy. Get a camera one on him.
Good.
Well, they captured how I felt with that one.
What else did we learn?
Maura, don't make that expression to Jim.
Don't feel sorry. That picture makes me sad.
Thank you, Maura. You're a much better teammate than these other two.
It makes me happy.
it does bring me a level of delight as well.
This is going to be the year, though. We're going to get him this year. We got the
Rolovich.
Run and shoot, Nick Rolovich over there.
I'm just glad we're going to be able to see it.
Yeah.
Didn't look like it was going to happen.
Pac-12 football, here we go.
What else did we learn, Maura?
That's it for today.
That's it for today. All right. That does it for us. Want to thank our guests, John Clayton, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, and Michael Bumpus for joining us on the program. If you missed any of today's show, head to the podcast page at 710sports.com. Click the podcast button. Then scroll down, click on our picture. Everything you missed is waiting for you there each and every day. Coming up next, we'll send you over to the Rays and Astros. Go Rays. Game 3 will be in progress. We'll be back tomorrow at 3 right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.